This podcast is brought to you by Cashflow Mastery, the only revenue management course in our industry that teaches you step by step how to become a master revenue manager in your hosting business. For more info, check out getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery. That's getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery.
Get paid for your pad. Get paid for your pad. Get paid for your pad.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Get Paid for Your Pad. And today we're really going to talk about how to get paid for your pad, because we're going to talk about revenue management. And my guest today, Jordan Locke, he's the founder of Rev Party Consulting and Revenue Management Consulting Service. And we're going to dive into revenue management strategies, how to make more money. So Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'd love to share what I know about revenue management and help people get paid for their pad.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, why don't you give us a quick background? Like, I know you've been in the industry for quite a while. What got you into short-term rentals and revenue management?
Yeah, so I've always been in pricing, actually, and I've priced a lot of different things. Oil and gas, water balloon fillers, toilet seats, computer chips, bananas, if you name it, I've probably tried to price it at some point in time. And, you know, about 8-9 years ago, there was a startup here in Austin just getting into vacation rentals. They didn't have anybody that knew what to do with revenue management. And they said, do you want to come over and try to make this up? And I said, that sounds like fun. Let's give it a shot. And then I stayed in vacation rentals ever since.
Got it. And you also have your own short-term rental units?
I do not.
Okay. Got it. So let me start off with this, because I know there's a lot of confusion around what revenue management really is. Like, how would you describe revenue management?
Yeah. So I think for revenue management, you kind of have to be okay with trying to attain something that's not 100% graspable. It has to be a theoretical idea of maximizing revenue. And so it's just always trying to improve how much money you make, right? And there's lots of different ways to go about it. There's lots of different strategies that people talk about, but honestly, you could do lots of different strategies. You could pull in strategies from banana pricing if you wanted to, and it'll probably help you make some money. And so really it's just finding what strategy really works to price your pad.
How do you price a banana?
How do you price the banana? It depends on what season it is. So that's important. And then also, there's a thing like, I joke around and I call it banana pacing, because just like how vacation rentals, people measure the kind of the pacing. Bananas, that's how they ripen. And so they actually have a specific sort of gas that makes them get more and more ripe and turn more and more yellow. And they have certain special rooms for these to get them more ripe before they go to the grocery store. So you kind of have to like keep tabs on banana pacing and how long they're going to be ripe for to figure out how much you need to sell.
That's amazing, man. I would love to learn more about that, you know, off record.
For sure.
So I know you work with a lot of clients. You have different portfolios throughout the country. Like, what are you seeing so far in 2024? We're about 2 months in. We're already 2 months in.
That's crazy. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, we're seeing some of what we expected from 2023. So, like I thought, you know, rates are a little more compressed. People have to be a little more aggressive on price and competitive early on. I would say that some of my worries I had kind of December, January are a little less so now. December and January for most of my clients was a pretty slow season, but that doesn't seem to really carry on to February. February and March are looking pretty good. I'm a little more optimistic probably for 2024 now than I was at the beginning of the year.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of seeing a similar thing. January was pretty slow for most of my portfolios, and then it's starting to look a lot better, especially this summer, especially in the ski regions and like northern US, like Canada. I'm actually seeing like pacing really ahead of schedule for May throughout, all the way through September. Is that something that you see as well?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're like really filling out super strong, but we are pacing ahead. And those really kind of key weekends, you know, are already getting booked really far in advance. So you really have to kind of stay on top of your calendar, because if you don't check it, you know, you might end up with a couple of missing weeks here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that, do you think, you know, when we look at, I look at July, August in some markets, and I'm just kind of amazed by how much occupancy is on the books already. And do you think, is that a, could that be a change in booking window, or does that indicate that there's going to be more demand for those months?
I think there is going to be a little bit more demand for those months. But I think it's kind of displaced from other time periods in the year. So I think, you know, kind of with the post-pandemic and the pent-up demand and the work from home and all the things that everybody's been talking about, right? Everybody was just a little more flexible. And I think, you know, you started to see it in 2023, but now especially in 2024, people are going to travel at those more traditional times, summer, spring break, winter break, things like that.
Right. Got it. Essentially, we're going back to normal. We're going back to what we used to
be. Yep. Normal vacations.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Are you making any adjustments to your pricing strategy for those summers, for the summer and those high demand dates to really capture like the most revenue there?
Yeah. So we definitely bumped up our rates a little bit since we got some business on the books. And then I would say is one thing is we're trying to make sure we really protect some of those key dates. And maybe that means like using a minimum length of stay as well. Right. Because we're starting to see, you know, those bookings come in early and sometimes it might be just a weekend if you don't have a minimum length of stay. And so you don't want to sell out all your weekends in August when you're in February. You probably miss the boat if you do that. So we're really looking at not only price, but also arrival and minimum length of stay kind of restrictions to help balance out summer.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Let's talk about peak dates, because I've been working with somebody who has some units that are right on the solar eclipse path, and people are paying some crazy rates, you know, to see that solar eclipse.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of hard to estimate, like, you know, how much can we charge, right? Because we also don't want to miss out on the demand at all. You know, it's kind of goes back to like discussions people have been having around like the Super Bowl and like the Taylor Swift concert. It's like, you know, you can charge a premium, but how do you figure out how much you can charge?
Yeah, so I think that's kind of interesting. I think the first thing I would do is try to find comparable events. It's like Super Bowls and Taylor Swift, right? That's what people try to do usually is find something comparable that they can base it off of. I think things that are like natural events, like a solar eclipse, are a little more different because it's so geographically kind of spread. And then also those are probably likely more drive to sort of destinations. And so it's probably going to be, you know, at least some sort of peak pricing, but it's probably going to be strongly influenced by the income and like disposable income available in your area within a couple hours.
Right. So if there's some really rich areas, you might be able to charge a lot more.
Yeah. Like I'm sure Joshua Tree, right? Probably tons of money. If you're in the middle of Kansas, probably got to keep it a little cheaper.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Yeah, because you know, we were looking at you know, how you can see in the pricing tools, you can see like what other properties are getting booked at, right? Mm-hmm. The actual calendars, and we noticed that most properties were charging around like 800, 1,000 a night, but then there was one property that got booked at 3,000. You know, so I was thinking, damn, like, but I'm not necessarily want to put the price for our unit at 3,000 as well, because I don't know if there's someone else that's going to be willing to pay for that. Maybe that person just got lucky, or, you know, like it's kind of hard to, because with normal periods, like high season, low season, shoulder season, like it's pretty clear what you can charge from just looking at, you know, other similar listings. But with these peak dates, it's like there has to be like one person with a lot of money who's like, you know what, I don't care. I just want my children to see the solar eclipse. And if I have to pay $3,000, I'm paying $3,000.
Yeah. And I think it depends too what kind of event it is and who's traveling. So, I'm in Austin. I'm Austin based. South by Southwest, huge festival, sells out the town. It's, you know, by far the biggest event here. But we also have F1 that comes to town. It's still a big event, but much smaller than South by. But the rates are so much higher because the kind of people that come into town for F1 just, you know, have the money to spend. And so I think it's kind of like that. You have to think about who's going to be traveling to the solar eclipse or what kind of house they want if they really care about the solar eclipse. And then another thing is you can kind of use game theory a little bit if you don't know what to do. And so, you know, if we're looking at this solar eclipse and we don't know if we can go for $3,000 or if we can go for a couple hundred dollars. You might just want to watch and see kind of what the current price is in the market and how quickly it's pacing. And if it's going slower, then everybody's probably overpriced. It's going to be a race to a bottom and you're going to be trying to, you know, cover your losses. And so if that's the case, you might want to kind of undercut early. But if it's booking out and everybody's buying $3,000 houses, then, you know, just hold your ground.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's the other tricky thing to understand is the booking window, right? Because like I was looking at pacing, obviously pacing is way ahead of last year because last year there was no sold units, right? So yeah, pacing is way ahead. But then, you know, I was having a discussion with this person of like, because the, you know, client was saying like, well, like, what if everyone's already booked? Like, it's a solar eclipse. People book way in advance for that, right? Like, I don't want to miss out on everybody. And so I was like, yeah, how do you estimate that booking window for such a specific event?
Yeah. It's honestly really, really hard. I tend to stay away from the idea that we'll kind of hold out to the last minute and sell once everybody's sold out. Because if you think about it, there's not too many times that like an entire area actually sells out, right? Maybe like the Super Bowl or the World Cup or something, but like very rarely does an entire area absolutely sell out. And then there's hotels too, right? If they absolutely want to stay, they probably have hotel rooms that are open that they can stay at. So I would always like hedge my bet and kind of try to go a little earlier rather than hold all my cards the whole time. But as far as knowing what the optimal places to sell, like that's just it's really hard for unique events like that, especially like the solar eclipse. I always think of like weather, and I'm like, how long are people going to wait so they can kind of get an idea if it's going to be cloudy or not, or if it's going to rain, I'm only a revenue manager. I don't have a meteorology degree, so I'm not sure how that plays in, but I'm sure it's some sort of factor, right?
No, 100%, like because the solar eclipse, I'm sure it's much more beautiful if it's this clear sky, right?
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. So like, I think you have a point there where it's like, oh, like, you know, a week in advance, you look at the weather and like, oh, it's going to be clear sky. There might be some last minute demand there. If it's going to be raining, you know, people might be like, you know what, next time.
Well, I think it's also interesting. So people talk a lot about kind of the big events that drive, you know, like peak seasons and lots of money. And I've been thinking lately a lot the other way around, kind of about trigger events or what causes people to start booking these things. And so I think the most obvious answer, for example, is like a concert, right? When someone drops the lineup, people go and buy tickets, and that's kind of a trigger event. But I think there's probably some trigger events for things like a solar eclipse too. Like you probably wait till it starts getting a little warmer and nicer outside and you see a clear sky and you think, hey, it would be nice to see this solar eclipse. Like maybe I should check it out. I think they did a study before to figure out when people bought winter coats. And they found out that it has to drop 12 degrees within 14 days. And then people will go buy a winter coat because they think it's starting to get cold. And so I'm sure there's all sorts of small things like that that apply to vacation rentals as well. Which is different things that happen in our life make us book in different ways.
That's what makes being a revenue manager so interesting. You have to be a psychologist. You have to be a weatherman. You have to be so many different things.
It's also why you always feel like you don't know what you're talking about. But
I know. And today we were on the revenue management panel, and then somebody made the remark and saying that we have to be all these different. We have to have all these different skill sets in order to really do a good job. But then also, like, we never know if we're actually right.
I think
you never know. Oh, you could have made more, maybe.
I think John DeRoulet before at a conference, I think it was him. He said, you know, being a revenue manager is just constantly questioning yourself until you have an existential crisis, which I think is probably pretty true of the job.
I know. It reminds me of my days as a trader in the financial world. you know, whenever I would do a trade that would make money, I would feel bad because I thought, because I would think, damn, I should have done this bigger, right? If I didn't make money, then I was mad as well. Damn, I made the wrong trade. So you're never happy.
No, it's the same in revenue management, even with like owners, property managers, people that don't even do revenue management, but, you know, like use it in their business. They can tell you if a price is too high and they can tell you if a price is too low. And like you can too, if you go to a restaurant, like, you know, if you felt like you overpaid or if it was a bargain. And so that's just like kind of also part of the job is everybody's going to have an opinion on how you price it. And they're going to think either you should have went more or you should have went less.
Right. Yeah. We, in Holland, we have an expression that says the best captains are on land. Does
that make sense? I like it. I've never heard that one, but I'm going to start using it.
All right. Sounds good. Let's talk a little bit about some different like strategies. Like if I'm a host with, let's say, like 5 to 10 units, you know, there's a lot of hosts out there who haven't really focused on revenue management because, you know, last 5 years, 10 years, it's been like pretty easy to make money. And now it's becoming more competitive. It was really like 2003 was really the first year where everyone's like, oh, damn, like stuff getting competitive. Like we need to start educating ourselves. We need to start understanding what we're doing because, you know, otherwise it's, you know, you got to make your mortgage or your master lease or you got to drive revenue for your clients sort of walking away. So, you know, I feel like revenue management has gotten like really important in the last couple of years. So the people that haven't really looked into it, your host of 5-10 listings, where do you start other than like just having a pricing tool?
Yeah. So I think, you know, to hit on your point, I think revenue management becomes more and more important kind of during the slow season or during the rougher times. I think it's, you know, much easier to be a competent revenue manager or at least get close to kind of your target when times are good. And revenue managers really earn their salary when times are rough. And so if you've never done revenue management before, or, you know, you just want to kind of start stepping it up, I always tell people to look at kind of what makes them unique or different that kind of separates them from everything else. Because I know everybody says, right, every property is unique and it's special, and it is. But what you have to do is find out like what's sellable, what's valuable, what's going to change the booking behavior, what's going to change the kind of guest you get, and how's that going to change your strategy? Does that mean you're targeting families earlier on, romantic couples? Is it a shorter booking window? Just the more you can kind of segment, right? That's what they call it in hotels. The more you can kind of segment, the more effective you'll be. And you can do that whether you have 100 properties or one.
Mm-hmm. And how would you find out this data? Like, how would you know, like, what kind of guest avatar to focus on and how much you can charge for the different guest avatars?
Yeah, so one way is to kind of look at the guests that come through you and the reviews they leave. I know there's some, like, different tools that allow you to collect web addresses, email addresses, and stuff for, like, check-in or to connect to the internet. So that's a good way to do it. You can also ask them to fill out short surveys sometimes, and that will help. But most of the time, honestly, I just try to put myself in the shoes of a traveler. And I think people don't do that quite enough because all of us travel or want to travel and have experience doing some sort of travel. And so if you put yourself in those shoes, most things start to make sense. And you're like, okay, this is what I would want, or this is what I would do if I was, you know, going with my significant other. And so just kind of going through that journey yourself is really going to help you figure out, you know, what's missing or what's the strong suit.
Right. Yeah, I think I have a good example of that, actually, because, you know, in our market in Idlewild, what I noticed is like we have a studio unit that's like very kind of romantic. And that thing just crushes compared to all the units in the market, you know. And I thought it was very interesting until, you know, it was my wife's birthday and I was looking for a place to stay, and then I found this like really romantic place that I was thinking, oh, my wife's going to love that, you know? And I realized like, wow, I'm a lot less price sensitive right now than if I would book something for me and my buddies. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm booking something with me and my buddies, it's like, all right, let's see. What's a good affordable place to stay? We just need a couch and a PlayStation, you know, it doesn't really matter. All right. And this time, you know, for my wife, it's like, oh, if she's going to love it, like I'd happy to spend like another, you know, $200-$400 for the weekend because, you know, so.
No, I agree. You have to think different people are price sensitive at different times too. So your example is good kind of based on the group. Another way is based on like how early you're booking in advance and how close you are. So people kind of had this mental accounting where, you know, if I'm booking for ski season now, I kind of see it as an investment. And then by the time ski season rolls around, I don't think of that as a cost of the trip because I already paid for it. So I spend more. So you have like lots of things like that. And I think wives are kind of the secret weapon for anybody that does any business here in vacation rentals. I know before when I was at our portfolio, it was the same sort of deal. We had a flagship location, you know, all of the walls were glass in the middle of downtown. It was beautiful. I was like, let's take my wife there. And I had her do the normal arrival process and found out it was horrible, right? Got all the feedback on how horrible the arrival was. So I think, you know, if you do vacation rentals, you got to have your wife go through your unit and give you the feedback.
That's a good tip right there. You know, one thing that I've been playing around with a lot is like the OTA promotions, mm-hmm. right? Let's just take Airbnb's example because Airbnb has a lot of them, right? There's like the last minute promotion, the length of stay, the early bird, the custom promotions, right? And that gives you some of those give you special marketing benefits, right? You get like a call out, strike through, mm-hmm. extra line item on the price breakdown. How important is it to use those promotions versus just using the pricing tool?
So I think the biggest difference is if it has a benefit that's specifically about visibility. Because a lot of the way the ranking and visibility kind of algorithms work is they look at pricing and they look at value for your unit, but they don't necessarily care if it comes in the form of a discount or a base price. They're just trying to give a good product to the traveler. But what's different is if you make a change in Wheelhouse or Price Labs and you drop your rate, that's not going to give you you know, any sort of visibility on like a campaign or a newsletter or their special page. And so I tend to focus more on things that give you visibility on the OTAs. It controlled most of my actual pricing kind of in dynamic pricing tools. And then usually I try to keep some sort of slash through. It's just optics. People love slash throughs. I usually have it built in as just like a flat percentage that's applied to all units. So I usually try to keep it slash through.
Right. So if you just set like a, let's say, you know, you set up your base prices a little higher than you normally would, and then you add like a manual 10% discount on the entire year, will that get Airbnb and VRBO to do the slash through?
So we'll, yeah, so that will give you a slash through. And so that's like how a lot of the base prices I end up setting is just a slightly higher to get the slash through. The one thing it doesn't do though is when they calculate value, so it's based on your posted rates and bookings for a certain period of time, usually like 3-ish months, give or take. Right. And so if you always have that slash through and it's always cheaper, then that doesn't really register as a 10% discount. It'll still show as a slash through, but it's not really showing as a value add. And so you have to be wary of that too. If you use the same tricks over and over again, they're not going to be as effective.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. What are some strategies when it comes to like the minimum night stay, right? That's a important thing to get right. You don't want to be too restrictive, but at the same time, you also don't want somebody to book a one night stay on a Saturday night for your top week in the summer, right? So how do you determine what the optimal length of stay is, especially for high demand months?
So I usually try to be as least restrictive as possible, if that makes sense. Just because you can kind of look at like the searches that happen. And for each additional day you set as a minimum, that's, you know, X percent of business or people that you're cutting out that's not going to see your property. So I try to lean more towards less restrictive. And then I focus especially on dates you wouldn't want to be split up. And so sometimes that's a minimum length of stay. Sometimes that's closing something to departure or arrival, right? So that they can't depart on a Saturday or something. And usually those are things like weekends or like events where people are going to stay the whole week, or it's like a 4-day festival, or just things that you don't want to split up. Other than that, I usually try to keep minimum length of stay low and just fill in my gaps as we get closer.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was interesting where we're on the, cause I do the same thing. You know, I don't like to set, for example, like 7-night minimum stays. Like one of my clients' portfolios, that's a lot of people do that because they want in the summer, they want people to book mm-hmm. an entire week. And, you know, we have like, depending on which unit and, you know, when exactly, we have like either a 3, 4, maybe a 5, depending on the size of the home as well. But we're still getting a lot of week bookings. And somebody on the panel that we're on today mentioned that as well. That just because you have a 4-night minimum stay doesn't mean that people aren't going to book the 7-night.
And you can encourage them. You can encourage them to do so. So, you know, not only with like a weekly discount, but know, if you set a 2-night minimum, for instance, on the weekend, so you don't split that up, and, you know, those are your higher prices because that's the high demand days, you can go in and set like cheaper prices on weekdays, right? Because it's not as likely to sell. But what happens is if I want to stay a week and I search for a week, then I'm seeing the average price of the weekend and the weekdays, right? And so getting aggressive on your weekdays without affecting your minimum length of stays can still help you drive those longer stays as well.
Yeah, got it. You know, one thing I've been telling all of our students is to schedule a time every single day in their calendar to focus on revenue management. Because what I see is that a lot, you know, in the short-term rental business, like, well, there's always something coming up, right? There's guests, there's cleaners, there's maintenance, there's always something to do, and there's always things popping up. And oftentimes, you know, especially if revenue management, looking at the pricing tool, is not your most favorite thing to do, it gets pushed off. And it's like, okay, well, I need to focus on the cleaning now, or I need to talk to this guest. Like, you know, I'll look at the pricing tomorrow, right? And so I'm trying to get all of our students to schedule a time in your calendar every Monday to Friday, or maybe in every, I mean, I look at it every day.
I do too.
Because I get up in the morning. I get up on Sunday, and the first thing I do is like I open all the price apps and look at all the bookings because it excites me. But if it doesn't, like, at least, you know, put a time in your calendar and where you can focus on it. Like, how much time do you think an average host with like 10 listings should spend on a daily basis?
If you have 10 listings, you can probably get away with 10 or 15 minutes on a daily basis, honestly. A lot of the work comes up front, right? When you're setting your strategy and getting your settings there. And after that, you're kind of just monitoring or adjusting to new market conditions or info. The biggest thing, if you have a small portfolio, is just that you can only sell every day once. And once it's sold, it's gone. And there's lots of variability, right? So if you book 1 week in one unit, that's 25% of your month that's just got booked. And that's a big change for you. Usually what I do is like every morning, I'll just do a quick once over of the calendar. Nothing fancy, not even tons of data. I'm just looking to see if anything looks weird, stands out, keeps changes. And then from there, I'll kind of get back into my normal job. But I kind of just wanted to, you know, keep a pulse on it and see if there's anything really that's changed overnight.
Right. And then are there things like that we should be looking at, like maybe on a weekly or like a monthly basis?
Yeah. So I usually try to set different like look ahead periods at different frequencies. So I'm usually looking at the next couple of days or the next couple of weeks, you know, pretty much daily since I do this professionally. But then when you start talking about like, you know, I look at a month at least once a week, probably twice a week. I'm looking out 90 days at least once a week. You know, at the end of every month, we have some things we do where we're going through and we're checking, you know, far out dates, new dates that we're opening. We're doing compression event reporting and adjustments. And so you just kind of start setting up a cadence because you don't have to check everything every day, especially if you have a pricing tool. But you have to stay on top of it. So just a calendar helps.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I've learned over the last few years that's really important is pacing, right? And I think not everybody understands what that means. Like, can you explain what the concept of
pacing? Yeah. So pacing is just you're comparing how fast you're filling up your calendar or your occupancy to something else. It could be the market. It could be your same unit or portfolio last year. You're just comparing kind of that rate of change. And you can think about it as, you know, you could kind of play a game where both you and I want to fill up a bucket of water in 5 minutes, and we both get a hose, right? We're going to sit there and we're going to watch the bucket and see how fast is it filling? Should I slow it down? Should I speed it up? And that's essentially what you're doing when you're doing it for your vacation rental, is you're watching how many bookings are coming in. If it's filling too fast, you kind of raise the rate and slow down the trickle, slow down the bookings. And if it's, you know, going too slow, you provide a discount. And so that's essentially all it is you're just trying to pace how quickly you fill out your calendar.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because one thing I noticed is because the winter was a bit slow, some of the people I work with are a bit concerned about the year, right? And so they're telling me like, hey, we should be aggressive at the rates because like I want to get booked up in advance because I'm worried that occupancy is going to be low, you know? And then I look at the pacing. I'm like, well, but, you know, I'm seeing like the market's like, you know, pacing ahead. So we should maybe raise the prices, right? So it's, you know, it's I think it's really important to look at that. And that data is available in most pricing tools, right? You can see like how much of the market is booked up already for the summer, for example. So is that something that you look at on a daily or a weekly or monthly basis? Like how far is the market pacing ahead? Or
I'd say we probably look at that almost daily. We have quite a few like custom data views that we make where we just get the visualizations we like. And so we're always kind of looking at price positioning and pacing side by side to kind of get a story of what's happening. I think it's important, kind of like what you said, is you can compare yourself to market. It also gets interesting if you compare yourself to market to yourself to market before. So, you know, where was I last year? Where was the market last year? And then how's that stack up now? And then when you start getting more experienced or, you know, more professional or applying more levers, that's when you start thinking, okay, I have more bedrooms. I should be booking out earlier. You know, the market changed because this is a new attraction. So I would expect this to happen. That's when the nuances come in, but really it's just, you have to make that comparison and know where you stand.
Mm-hmm. Got it. What are some practical tips that you have for people that are listening right now? Like if people want to improve their revenue management and if they want to increase their income, what are some practical things they can do right now?
Oh, so I think there's a few like kind of easy tips to follow. And I say like a lot of people just kind of randomly change prices and in the hope it works. But not all prices have the same effect. And so making prices changes that matter is what's going to have an impact. So charm pricing, right? So ending in like fours and nines. It's really weird, but it works. It's kind of like, you know, if you go to a conference or a motivational speaker and they ask how you're doing, then they ask again and everybody's louder. Right. It's like it shouldn't work, but it works every time. Every time someone gets louder. It's the same with nines and fours. I also like to think of like price bands is what I call them. And so they're just kind of natural numbers that people think in. It's like $100, $150, $250. And those are just ways that people kind of budget themselves, but it's also what people will plug into filters. And so going from $101 to $99 is going to have a huge effect because it's going to put you in that filter underneath 100. But if you go from 103 to 101, you're probably not moving the needle much. And so I would say, you know, practical things is you can make really small adjustments that have a big impact that just make common sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. Why is the four such a psychological? I understand the nine.
Because the base 10 system and five's half of it. So people think in tens and fives. And so four is kind of, you know, just below five. When I priced other things that were more expensive, right, we had lots of different rules. Like, so you would slowly take out more and more numbers the bigger the price was. So you start by taking out like sixes and eights. And then next thing you know, you're getting rid of twos, and threes, and sevens. And then you only got four and nine left. But those are just kind of the most round numbers that people like.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Awesome, man. Well, appreciate you jumping on here and sharing some knowledge. Why don't you let everybody know how they can contact you if you know if they're interested in learning more?
Yeah, for sure. So you can always find me on LinkedIn, or our company's website is www.revpartyconsulting.com. There you can see all of our services, blogs, links to other sorts of webinars and resources. Try to put as much information up there as possible. You can always reach out by email, Jordan@revpartyconsulting.com, or fill out a contact form. We're pretty good at getting back to people. And even if, you know, our services aren't for you, we'll still try to help you and point you in the right direction.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jordan. It's been great having you on. I'm sure I'll see you at the next revenue management panel or conference. Or it's a small world.
There's only so many of us, so I'll probably be there.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you jumping on. And to the listeners, hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back soon with another one.
Thanks.
Until then.
Get paid for your pet. Get paid for your pet. Get paid for your pet.
I have a question for you. Do you have a solid revenue management strategy in place to maximize the revenue for your listings? Is revenue management part of your daily routine? If not, then you're leaving money on the table. The days that we can ignore revenue management in our hosting business and still do well are over, my friends, and they won't come back. So if you either don't use dynamic pricing and manually enter prices on the OTAs, or you have a pricing tool set up but you're not sure how to use it correctly, then the Cashflow Mastery is for you. In this brand new course, I teach you step by step how to set up your pricing tool, create a winning revenue management strategy, and give you a daily, weekly, and monthly workflow to evaluate your portfolio performance and make strategic price adjustments. I walk you through how we set up our revenue management for FreeWild, from setting up your base price to minimized stays, length of stay discounts, adjacent day pricing, orphan night pricing, and much more. On top of that, you'll get access to countless of calculators and tracking sheets that will give you the insights you need to make the right pricing decisions. The course comes with a Facebook group where you can ask questions every day and monthly live Zoom calls to help you stay on track. Do you want to manage your revenue and master your cash flow? Then sign up now at getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery. That is getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery.